All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves continuing in Sefer Tehillim. I'm going to spend one more week on Perach Samech Hei. I promise this is the last one. Oh, maybe not. We'll see. But at least for this week, it's the last one. We're going to focus this week in Meretz Hashem on Perek Dalet. Excuse me, Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. So remember, again, we've been really making our way through this particular Perek, understanding the incredible profundity in each and every one of these psukim. Again, I'm sure in every chapter of Tehillim, one could do what we're doing over here, which is really pick apart each pasuk and see a self-contained theme. But it's amazing to see how in Samech Hei, literally, each and every pasuk contains its own overwhelming, riveting, life-affirming message. So this morning, I want to draw your attention to Pasuk Dalet. So it's the underlined Pasuk, underlined in the Hebrew and the English. David HaMelech writes, Divrei Avonos Gavru Meni. Literally, words of iniquities have overcome me. Psha'enu Ato Techapre. As for our transgressions, you shall atone for them. So David HaMelech really over here highlights two fundamental ideas. Number one, being overcome by transgressions. And number two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power of forgiveness, the divine power of forgiveness. So what is David HaMelech trying to convey? So Rashi, the Mitzudas David, the Malbim, each go in slightly different directions. Let's take a look at number two. Says Rashi, Divrei Avonos Gavri Meni, literally words of iniquities have overcome me. Rashi says, Ve'in Anu Yecholim Lahaspik L'Sader Kulam Lefanecha. And this statement of Rashi is a bit overwhelming. Rashi says, you know, David HaMelech is saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, even if I wanted to speak to you about all of the things that I've done wrong, I couldn't do it. I've done so many things wrong. I've made so many mistakes and missteps that even if I wanted to apologize for every single thing that I've done wrong, I would be unable. Divrei Avonos Gavri Meni. Words of iniquities have overcome me. I can't even articulate all the things that I've done wrong. So the truth is, let's talk about this in just a moment. David HaMelech was a pretty big tzaddik, right? I think we would all agree. We don't have to put up for a vote, right? King David, the father of not only Jewish dynastic monarchy, but the father of the messianic line. David HaMelech is the father, is the Zayda of Mashiach, which means that he was an exceptionally pious and righteous individual. And yet, King David is saying, even if I wanted to apologize for all the things that I've done, I don't even know that I'd be able to find the words, which is such an overwhelming statement. Because what David HaMelech is telling us, remember again, when David HaMelech writes to Tehillim, although he's writing as a reflection of his own life, he's writing for us, right? Tehillim is the way, very often in life, we can't find the right words. David HaMelech gives us the words for every life circumstance, for every life situation. David HaMelech even gives us the words for all of the different feelings we experience that often we cannot dissociate words with. So what David HaMelech is espousing over here is, you know, sometimes we aim for perfection, right? This actually is a very big problem in contemporary society, and I think it's especially acute in the frum community. In the frum community, we aim for perfection. We aim for perfection with shiduchim. We aim with perfection in everything. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. There's no perfection to be found in this universe outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribono Shel Olam is the only perfect entity. Hatzur Tamim Pa'alo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect. He's the rock. Everything else, by definition, is imperfect. The only variable that exists is how acute your imperfections are. So some people are more imperfect, some people are less imperfect, but everyone is imperfect. And David HaMelech is highlighting the following. Look at a given day. Look at a given day. And think about the things. If a person were to do, it's very important, the Sifrei Musar, right? They need to do a cheshbon ha-nefesh. Every day, to introspect. To introspect, again, to keep a ledger. Imagine keeping a life ledger where you record on any given day what went right and what went wrong. So let's focus on the what went wrong part for just a moment. Imagine a person is to take stock of all the things that they didn't do correctly on a given day. What David HaMelech says is, for all the things that you know you did wrong, there's probably 100 other things that you don't even realize you did wrong that are wrong. Either because sometimes I lack knowledge, right? Maybe I'm not knowledgeable about certain areas of halacha. So therefore, again, there are certain things that I do wrong. I don't even know that it's wrong. I don't even have the knowledge. And then there are certain things that becomes so much part of just our habitual day-to-day behaviors, even though they're wrong, but they're part of what I do. Now, again, the point of this is not to make us feel bad about ourselves. The point of this is to make us fully cognizant of our own limitations and our own limitations, that we are highly imperfect beings. The most important realization to live your life with is that you are a highly imperfect being. You're saying to yourself, I come to this year to make myself feel better about myself. And I tell you that. So I want to tell you something. When you live life with the recognition that you are a highly imperfect being, life is so much better. First of all, you get angry much less. A lot of times we get angry at people and angry at situations because we hold people and we hold circumstances to a metric of perfection. But if I accept the fact that I am a highly imperfect being, then that conditions me to accept the imperfections in others and the imperfections in life. How much relationship strife is created because someone, we speak about this all the time, because someone doesn't live up to my expectations. Whether it's a husband, a wife, a child, and we get so angry and we get so upset and relationships fall apart. Meanwhile, no one ever stops to ask themselves, are my expectations realistic? Are my expectations really appropriate? Am I trying to hold an imperfect being to perfect expectations? How many of us walk through life thinking that everything in life is supposed to go according to plan? You know, I find it amazing. I find, and this is just my own observation, that people are struggling with emunah much more these days. I'm not an old man, but old enough to see like a dramatic difference. Like everybody's in the midst of a theological crisis. It's a theological turmoil. And it's very interesting to me because never have we had such affluence. Never have we had such affluence. Never have we had such opportunities. Never have we been integrated as such a dramatic part of existence. So what's the pshat? I think about this. My grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, who was a survivor, who lost everything. I remember that when we used to learn with him, we asked him a question. He was teaching Gemara Mishnah, and we would ask him a question. His answer was always the same. I think I mentioned this before. His answer always was, Shtait Netaira. That's what it says. So when I was little, I thought maybe he just doesn't know the answer. And then as I got older, I realized he was teaching us an incredible lesson. You don't have to understand everything. You don't have to understand. Kadosh Baruch Hu says it, then you do it. And this was from a man who was entitled to ask any and every single question with everything that he saw. So I tried to ponder to myself, so how is it that I see two generations ago, people who went through such terrible Gehinnom, and I would include my parents' generation that all, who never seemed to really struggle all that much theologically, and I look at my generation and the generation below me, younger than me, who everybody's struggling. What's the, everybody has such kasha, it's not like Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I realize, I don't know if this is correct, but it's my theory. My theory is that my grandparents and my parents never had an expectation that life was supposed to be easy or go according to plan. So when things didn't work out, it didn't like shter their emunah. They weren't like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Where's HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Keili, keili, lama azavtani? Because 7 Mile Market is out of whatever. You know, they never had these challenges. But I think we live with an expectation of perfection. Everything should be the way it's supposed to be. My children's school needs to live up to this expectation. My shul, this expectation. My friends, my teachers, my spouse, my marriage, my parnasa, my career, everything. And when something falls short of the expectations of perfection that we have, it throws us into a theological tailspin. Suddenly I don't understand. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing to me? What's the message? What is it? I thought I was going to have the storybook marriage. I thought Parnos was always going to be easy. I thought I would never have any struggles with health. I thought my children would always follow the straight and narrow. I thought. Perfect. It's not perfect. What's happening? David HaMelech says, is where do you begin thinking that life is supposed to be perfect? What perfection can you find in the world? Look how flawed we are. And by the way, I want to point something out. You know, sometimes when people say that, look how flawed we are, you think that, like, that's a condemnation of man. Chas v'shalom. When we say, look how flawed we are, you know, in the next breath, we say, but yet we are so incredibly amazing. When we say, David HaMelech tells us, divrei avonos gavru meni, that too many sins to even articulate, what David HaMelech is saying is, let's embrace our imperfection. Let's embrace our imperfection. Let's recognize that each of us realize we have imperfections, and for every imperfection you know about, there are probably five more that you have not yet even acknowledged. Maybe you know that they're there, but you choose to ignore them. Or maybe you don't even realize that they are there yet, and that's okay. That's okay. Because we don't have to be perfect. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to be perfect. Our job is just to become better. But David HaMelech says, once you embrace your personalistic imperfections, then you can embrace the imperfections in the other, and you can make better life relationships. And once you embrace your own imperfections, you could embrace imperfection in the world and recognize that just like I'm imperfect, there are many imperfections that happen all around me. Life doesn't go according to plan. Life doesn't go how I had in mind. This doesn't materialize the way I thought it would. Okay, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect. Everything else, by definition, is deficient. And the moment I can embrace this mindset is the moment that life becomes so much better. Readjust expectations of yourself, of the other, and of life. And suddenly, again, every setback is something I have to deal with, but doesn't derail me from accomplishing the things I need to in life. That's Rashi. He says, Mitzudas Tav writes, Gavru Meni, Rotze Lomar, Im Ki'in Bahazichios Lachrias Ha'avonos, I'll call that the chaprem bechazdecha. So the Mitzudas Tavra says something very interesting. He says, you know, sometimes when it comes to spirituality, we kind of view ruchnius like a scale, right? So what happens? We're amongst friends, so we can speak openly. I commit an aveira. So for most of us, what's usually the next, what's the reaction to that? Feeling guilty. That we're Jewish, that's always an excellent first stop, right? Feeling guilty. Usually, I'm sorry? I won't do it again. So you are a group of Nashim Sidkanio. So what you're referring to over here is tshuva. Let me tell you how the non-tzaddik part of the population thinks, right? What can I do that's good? Right? What can I take on? I did something really, because tshuva is really hard. Tshuva is really hard. I should say differently. Real authentic tshuva, real authentic repentance is exceptionally difficult. It's probably the most difficult thing in the entire world. That's why most of us tend not to really do tshuva. Instead, what we try to do is balance the scales with something positive. Right? So I did something wrong. Let me just go out and do something wonderfully positive. I'm going to do an incredible act of chesed. I'm going to do it, which is beautiful, except it creates a little bit of a childish view of how ruchnius works. Sometimes we think that it's like a scale. So if I did something on the negative side, it weighed myself down. Ultimately, again, let me do something on the positive and it'll balance things out. Now, the truth is, remember, there is a concept, of course, of building up positive spiritual momentum with dynamic positive activity. There's no question. But my dynamic positive activity does not address the wrongdoings that I have performed. There's no scale. I mean, there is a scale. But when you commit an aveira, it's not the pshat that if I do a couple of mitzvahs, Baruch Hashem, the Aveira is null and void, it's not here anymore. That Aveira still has to be dealt with. Says Mitzudas David, Rotze Lomar, Kiein Ba'azichios Lachrias Havonos. No matter how many mitzvos I have, I don't have enough mitzvos to go ahead and outweigh my Aveiros. Now, I know this sounds strange because very often in the Gemaras and in the Ma'amari Chazal that speak about the concept of tshuva, tzadikim, rishaim, beinonim, the imagery that's often used scales or scales. But again, that's more to create an image. But the way it works betachlis is, if I go ahead and I commit an avera, the only way for me to deal with that is how? Is to deal with that. Is to actually engage in the process of tshuva, for which there is a process to deal with transgressions. No matter, good news is, no matter how big, no matter how significant, there's always a process to deal with it. But lest you think that the more mitzvos you do, don't worry about the averos, because it'll tip the scale in your favor. David HaMelech says, "Divrei avonos gavru meni." You, no matter how many mitzvos I do, I cannot tip the scales away from the averos. What King David is saying is, you have to deal with your baggage. We've seen this many. This is an ongoing theme throughout Sefer Tehillim. You have to deal with your baggage. If you think that you're going to deal with your averos simply by doing more mitzvos, I'm going to deal with my transgressions and shortcomings simply by engaging in more positive, dynamic actions, that's a nice thought. And the mitzvos are beautiful, but it doesn't work to address the averos. Divrei avonos gavru meni. Excuse me. So therefore, David HaMelech says, words of iniquities have overcome me. I do a lot of mitzvahs. I do a lot of mitzvahs, but I also have a lot of averos. And unfortunately, again, my averos cannot be eclipsed by the performance of my mitzvahs. An incredible idea. Remember, David HaMelech knows about this firsthand because he had to deal with people who did not adequately deal with their baggage. Remember, again, his entire life is upended by his father-in-law, by Shaul, right? Shaul, remember, does not deal with his life baggage, with tragic circumstances. Shaul was a great man. Shaul was a tzaddik. But he was so broken by the fact that the monarchy was taken away from him because he did not follow the directive of God on more than one occasion. But it was the episode of not wiping out Amalek that really was the straw that broke the camel's back. He was so broken over that, for whatever the reason, could not accept responsibility for his actions, and therefore deflected the entire thing onto David HaMelech. It ruined David HaMelech's family life. It ruined his marriage. It uprooted David's life in so many dramatic ways. David saw what happens when you don't deal with your baggage, which, by the way, is one of the incredible aspects of David HaMelech. Many wonderful things, many incredible things, but I think one of the things that stands out most about the Davidic personality is the ability to deal with failure immediately. Right? The paradigmatic example of this is David and Bathsheba. David deals with that moral failure immediately. He's confronted by the Navi, and David HaMelech responds with two words, Chatasi LaHashem. He owns it. It's one of the most dramatic episodes of tshuva. In fact, we don't really find that anywhere else, right? Adam HaRishon is confronted with the fact that he ate from the eights, and what does he say? It was her. It was her, right? Chalal Yisrael is faced with the fact that they built a golden calf. You don't really see, Moshe Rabbeinu advocates on their behalf, but you see no acceptance of responsibility. David HaMelech is the paradigmatic example of the Baal Tshuva. You do something wrong, own it. Own it. Don't explain it. Don't deflect it. Don't justify. Just own it. Because once you own it, you have the power to fix it. So according to the Mitzudas David, Gavru Meni, David HaMelech is saying, I've committed so many averos, I've also committed, Baruch Hashem, so many incredible mitzvos. But no matter how many mitzvos I perform, there is no number of mitzvos that could outweigh the averos. Because the only way to deal with averos, to deal with sin, to deal with failure, to deal with shortcomings in life is how? To deal with it directly. You cannot go ahead and offset the negativity in your life or in your persona through an overabundance of good. Overabundance of good is wonderful. This is what David HaMelech himself says. Sur meira v'yasei tov. Right? That order is very specific. Stay away from evil, veer away from evil, and do good. Doing good is incredibly profound, cathartic, and impactful as long as it's preceded by owning and taking care of the stuff that is broken. The Malbim writes in number 4, a very beautiful Malbim. The Malbim writes, Divrei Avonos Gavru Meni. The Malbim writes number 4, Hu Nusach HaTfilah SheEspalalu. He says this actually refers to the prayer that King David prayed. Tefillah Dara Melchtav. Now watch this. Hagam shanu chotim ubilti ru'uyim. Hey navonos asher gavnu many divrayim hu shepashanu ato techaprim mitzayir ki'ilu. I'm just going to read one more line. Mitzayir ki'ilu haavonos asher heim gavnu v'chizku min ha'adam va'adam en yochol iskaber alehim heim atz, excuse me, heim atzmam yedabru v'yamlitzu v'nei Hashem shechaper apshon. So the Malbim understands that David HaMelech is speaking poetically. This is Tehillim. So the way that, listen to how the Malbim translates the phrase. Divrei avonos gavru many. Words of iniquity have overcome me. David HaMelech says that sometimes in the aftermath of sin, I am so broken and so upset that I can't even advocate for myself. So who advocates for me? Get ready for this. Who advocates for me? The sin advocates for me. And the sin itself, says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give the guy a break. He's just a human being, right? He's flesh and blood. He has desires, wants, proclivities, pushes and pulls. Take it easy on him. So David HaMelech says, even chait realizes how, what's the right word? Not fickle and not sensitive, but how fragile we are. Even chait itself, even the sin, obviously again, this is poetic. Even the chait itself realizes how fragile I am. And therefore, in the aftermath of major life failure, it's the sin itself who advocates for me on high. Can you imagine this? The sin itself advocates for me, saying, Chalish Baruch Hu, don't get so upset. Don't lose it with this individual. I know he or she transgressed. I know he or she violated. But they're Basar Vadam, they're flesh and blood. They're just people trying their best to navigate in a somewhat complicated world. So forgive the iniquity, forgive the mess up, forgive the sin, and give them another chance. It's quite beautiful. He goes on. He says, Heim atzmam yedaberu. I'm three lines in right after the comma, number four. Heim atzmam yedaberu v'amritzu lefnei Hashem sheyechaper hapeshoim. The sins themselves advocate on our behalf, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive us, because no one knows the fragility of man better than the sin itself. The sin says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, sometimes they can't overcome their wants and desires. Sometimes, again, their human fragility is just so acute that they cannot summon up the power to resist temptation. So as David HaMelech says, we are so fragile that even sometimes we lack the ability to advocate for ourselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But good news, divrei avonos gavru many. The words of the averos themselves, the right, the averos themselves speak on my behalf on high before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But perhaps David HaMelech is also highlighting a little bit of a different theme. To appreciate this theme, we're going to go on a little bit of a detour through the parasha. So this week's parasha, we read Parashas Mishpatim. So Mishpatim begins with an interesting set of halachas. Take a look at number 5. So the pasuk says, Ve'ela Mishpatim asher tosim lefnehem. These are the laws that you shall place before Klal Yisrael. Ki sikne eved ivri. When you will purchase an eved ivri. This is a Jewish servant. Sheish shonim yavot. He will work for you for 6 years. U'bashvias yetze l'chofshi chinam. And on the 7th year, he will go out free. Remember again, not to be confused with Shemitah. This has nothing to do with Shemitah. This is, he works 6 years. That's the term. Works 6 years, 7 years he goes out free. Whether that's 7th year, Shemitah year, not Shemitah year, is irrelevant. So who is this individual? Remember again, this is quite fascinating. You know, whenever we speak about the concept of an Eved, a servant or a slave, so very often our conception of that is colored by black slavery as it occurred in this country, which of course was barbaric, was oppressive, which is the history of slavery throughout mankind. Judaism has a very different model of servitude. Whether your servant is Jewish or non-Jewish, it is a system that is by definition humane. It is a system that looks out, ultimately again, for the needs of the servant slash slave, and in the cases of a Jewish servant, again, creates a limit, a term of servitude, and actually requires, amazing enough, in Jewish servitude, if you own a Jewish servant, not only are you obligated to treat him as a member of your household over the course of the servitude, but when he leaves servitude, there's something called hanaka, which essentially means you have to give him like startup capital to start off his life. Meaning, in short, Jewish servitude usually is a loss leader, right? It's a money pit, meaning it's not you're not making good money off this, because the level you have to support him at, and if he brings in his family, and what you have to go ahead and give him when he leaves is quite dramatic. But even for the Gentile servant, even for what we call the Eved Kenani, it is a humane system of servitude. In fact, the halacha is that if a master abuses his slave, we have this in this week's parasha, you hit your slave, you abuse your slave, you knock out his eye, you knock out his tooth, the halacha is, he goes free. There is no abuse of another human being that is ever tolerated as part of the Judaic system. It's very important because, again, slavery to us is a bad word, understandably so, but this system of servitude is dramatically different. So who is this Jewish servant? Who is this Jewish slave? Rashi number 6 writes as follows. Rashi writes, Ki sikne miyad beizdin shemachru bignei vaso. What's the case we're talking about over here? We're talking about a person who stole. Now the halacha is when you steal, you have to pay back that which you stole. So we're talking about a person over here who stole and who has an inability to pay back that which he stole. So what do you do if you can't pay back that which you stole? Or that which you stole? You are sold into servitude. So essentially what you do is you work off your debt. So I stole an object worth $1,000. I don't have $1,000, no money to my name. I go to work for the person who I stole from or for someone else, and somehow I work off that debt. So that's the individual who we are talking about over here. Person who stole, sold into servitude, worked as an Eved Ivri, as Jewish servant, for the maximum duration of 6 years in order to work off his debt. So the commentaries on the Chumash ask a basic question, which is, why is this the first halacha that is taught to the Jewish people? So remember again, just so we get our bearings a little bit, Klal Yisrael by Parshas Mishpatim, where are we? Parshas right Har Sinai, right? Remember again, Parshas Mishpatim is still all part of Sinaitic revelation. It's all still part of the giving of the Torah. So we got the Ten Commandments last week, Aseret HaDibros, right? We haven't yet read about the eagle, the golden calf. That's going to come a little bit later. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Mishpatim. Remember again, the concept of Mishpatim essentially is tort law. The laws of damages, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to build a society, and the cornerstone of any society is a respect for the other. If you don't have respect for the other, you cannot build a society. So amazingly enough, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't begin by delving into spiritual laws, but very simply begins by delving into interpersonal law. But the question that all the commentaries ask is, why this halacha? Why are you starting with Eved Kenani? For example, if you go on a little bit in Parshas Mishpatim, you'll find the Torah spends a good amount of time speaking about the laws of damages. I damage you, you damage me, a variety of different cases. I understand why that's necessary. Remember again, understand, at this point in time, where are we headed to? Eretz Yisrael, it's Canaan. How long is it going to take us to get there? A couple of weeks, right? That's, remember again, this is before the sin of the golden calf. Just a couple of weeks. That's the goal. So it makes sense. We're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to go into Eretz Canaan. We have to build a society. Society is built on laws. Society is built on rules. Without rules, without laws, there's chaos. Without chaos, there's no society. So I understand so much of Parshas Mishpatim. I get it. But why do you have to begin with the laws of an Eved Ivri? Why is this the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us? And to complicate the question a bit more, it's a very specific circumstance. Who are we talking about? An individual ultimately who what? Who stole. But not just that he stole. A lot of people steal. Unfortunately, a lot of people steal. What's halacha if you steal? You pay back. So we're not talking about a person who stole, but a person who stole and doesn't have the ability or the means to pay back. Very, very limited segment of the population. Not only that, but without getting too technical, the Rambam explains that the laws of Eved Ivri only apply when there is Yovel. When there is Yovel, the Jubilee or the 50th year. We'll get into that in just a little bit. If there's no Yovel, then there's no concept of Beis Din selling someone into servitude in order to go ahead and work off a debt. So number one, we're talking about a very limited segment of the population, someone who's stealing, a thief. Number two, it's only a thief who can't pay back. And number three, this whole construct only exists when the Yovel year is in effect. Why are you starting the Mishpatim segment, the Mishpatim section, with a mitzvah or a halacha of such limited scope? There are other things that are so much more what we call lemaisa, right? So much more practical, so much more prevalent, so much more relevant, that apply each and every day, that apply to large swaths of the population. And yet, for some reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt compelled to begin with this halacha. So it must be, of course, that Eved Ivri doesn't just teach us the laws about the Jew who steals, can't pay back, and is sold into servitude to work off his debt, but rather there must be a deeper meaning and a deeper dimension to this mitzvah. So take a look at number 7. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef. Rav Yaakov Yosef of Ponoi, see, he was one of the primary Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. He says as follows, and this is incredible. U'bazeh yuvan ki sikne eved ivri. Says the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, there is such a profound message that is embedded in here. Hakavano ki mishamish b'loshon asher ki rohi shetikne tchila b'chinas eved dehainu shelo lishma amenas lekabel pras. Says the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, the Torah is teaching us a deeper message. If you look at the phrase ki sikne eved ivri, so we all read that phrase. How do you translate it? When you purchase or acquire an Eved Ivri, who's the one who's purchasing me? I'm purchasing someone else. So it's like, no. It's actually a message to the self. The first step of personalistic growth, the first thing you should be kona, you should acquire for yourself, is to become an Eved Ivri. That's the first step in personalistic maturation. The first step in spiritual growth is to become a Jewish servant, an Eved Ivri. What does that mean to become an Eved Ivri? So we think about probably what does that mean? Like subservience. No, says Toldos Yaakov Yosef. He says, Dahainu shelo lishma al menas lekabel pras. Why does a servant serve his master? Why does a servant serve his master? Why do most people go to work? Why do you serve your master in the office? Because you want to get paid, right? There are some people who love their job so much that if they were not to receive a paycheck, they wouldn't go, right? But even those people, no matter how much you love a job, I serve my master for pras, for payment. Now the truth is, remember the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Antigone says, Al tiu kavodim hamisham shnes harav amenas lekabel pras. Do not serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do not serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a servant who serves his master for the sake of receiving reward. Rather what? Be like a servant who serves the master, not for the sake of receiving. So what's the ultimate goal in Yiddishkeit? What's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is selfless service. That's the goal. That's what we all work towards. I want to be a selfless servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, we're learning now Mesiyas Yesharim in the morning. We're in the Perek Yates, the 19th chapter of Chassidus. So the Ramchal himself says, what is a chassid? What is a chassid? A chassid is someone who serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu selflessly. He says something amazing, which I've read it before. I don't know why it impacted me so much more this time. The Ramchal says, you know, if you ask a person, why do you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So a person might say, I want to become the best version of myself. I want to activate my inner holiness. I want to make an impact on the world. The Ramchal says, are those good answers? They're beautiful answers. But if you notice, they're all about me. They're all about me. So I'm not really serving God. I'm serving me. My avodas Hashem is selfish, not selfless. Now halavai, that should be the level that we're on. That's the selfishness of our avoda. But the Ramchal says, the chassid, a truly pious individual, serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sake. Because I want to give nachas to my father. Because I want his presence to be more acutely felt in this world. So as I told the Yaakov Yosef, while it is true that the ultimate goal is selfless service of God, but it's okay to start out with selfish service of God. Ki sikne eved ivri. When you begin the process of cultivating your inner spirituality and holiness, start with becoming a servant. And what does a servant do? A servant serves the master for the sake of receiving reward. What is the Toldos Yaakov Yosef saying? In this simple pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us that ruchnius, spirituality, must be acquired in small incremental steps. The greatest mistake we make in the cultivation of a spiritual identity is we want to go 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. I want to get to the top, right? I want to be the tzah. I want to be a lamed vavnik. I know nothing now, but I want to be a lamed vavnik within 2 hours. And you see this all the time, by the way, right? You see this a lot of times when people become bali tshuva, they do too much too fast. Too much too fast. And that's why very often, a lot of people end up crashing and burning. There is bal tshuva burnout, right? And bal tshuva burnout is, I get all excited, right? I went to the Shabbaton, or I did this, or I had that, or, and it's wonderful, and it's fantastic, and it's great. And so today, I'm nothing, and tomorrow, I'm frum. And then a year later, I'm asking myself, what happened over here? And my kids are disillusioned and disenfranchised, and the whole family feels like I kidnapped them on some type of spiritual odyssey that I got excited about because of a Havdalah service, and no one knows what happened to them. Spirituality is slow, incremental steps. You start small, 1 foot in front of the other. Modest objectives and accomplishments. Do not try to become something great within a moment. Take small steps. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was speaking to the fledgling nation of Am Yisrael. Remember again, you have to understand something. Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, our ancestors, had a very anomalous type of spiritual evolution. We did go from 0 to 16 under 3 seconds. Remember again, we see the Makos. By the Yam Suf, we saw God. At Har Sinai, we saw God. We heard God. It's not normal. This is not the normal progression of spiritual state. This is not the normal course of spiritual progression. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let's pump the brakes a little bit. And understand that what you've experienced up until now, this is not the norm. This is not the norm. The norm is, Ki Sikna Eved Ivri. Take your time. If you want to grow in your ruchnius, small steps. And by the way, it's not just true for Bali Tshuva. It's true even for those who are from birth. When you want to grow, the greatest mistake we make in a ruchnius, you know what this happens? We've spoken about this before, I'm sure. Where does this happen all of the time? It happens Elul. You know what happens Elul, right? What the most famous phrase that's uttered every single Elul is? This is the year. This is the year. This is it. I know I've been talking about that. I'm going to do what I'm going to accomplish my whole life. This is the year I'm going to make it all happen. And again, I take, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And then what happens? I'm all on fire. Elul is great, and Tishrei is great. And the Ilah Mamesh, I don't even need to eat. That's how Ruchni I am. I can go another 4 days. It's going to be great. And then Sukkis comes, Shmini Atzeres, right? If you're really good, Chanukah, you're still feeling inspired. Tu B'Shvat comes, the trees are dead, and I feel a little bit dead as well. And it's back to normal. Why? Because there's a phrase in the Gemara, tafasta meruba lo tafasta. You know, I remember when I was a kid, they used to have this contest where they would let I don't remember the details, if it was a child or adults, like into a toy store, and you had like 30 seconds or whatever, 2 minutes, and whatever you could grab off the shelves. And I remember even as a child watching this and seeing, it's fascinating, you can learn so much about people. There are two different mahalkim, two different approaches to this. There are some people who just like walked in and started grabbing everything. And you know what happens when you grab everything? Most of the stuff drops out. And not only that, you're not being methodical in what you're taking. So you may end up with a lot of stuff, but it might not be what you want. Versus other people who knew where they needed to go and what they needed to get. So they got much less, but what they got they were able to retain. And what they got were things that were purposeful, meaningful, and good, in quotations. It's such an incredible paradigm for life. If you run into the store of Ruchnias and say, okay, I want it all. So first of all, whatever you grab onto, most of it is going to fall out. And whatever you end up with may or may not be the right fit for you. So you have to be methodical in your spirituality. What do you want to work on? Not 5 things, 1 thing. 1 thing. You can move on to the next thing. When do you move on to the next thing? Like, you don't get dessert until you finish your dinner, right? Meaning, finish what you're doing first and then move on. Now, some things in Ruchnius you never quote-unquote finish, right? But what it means is master something before you move on to the next thing. Because there are people who go ahead and become a jack of many trades and a master of none. I've started multiple things, multiple ruchnius endeavors. I did a little bit of this. I dabbled in that. Spent some time over here. Are you good at anything? Are you spiritually proficient thing? No, but I've seen it all. That is an unfulfilling life. So therefore, again, says the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, Kisikne Evi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tamin Klal Yisrael, start slow. What you've seen up until now is not the norm. Is not the norm. The way meaningful Ruchnius Dik life works is one small step at a time. Identify what you're working on now. Don't say 5 things. Don't say 10 things. Don't give me a laundry list of things you want to fix in yourself, you want to fix in your life. Choose one thing. And when you finish that thing, then go on to the next. Ki sikna eved ivri. It's okay to start out your ruchnius career by saying, you know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm serving you because I would like a good world, a good life in this world. I'd like a good life in the afterlife. I want my children this. It's okay. Just like the Eved serves the master for reward, you could begin by serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu for reward also. The goal is don't stay in that level. Graduate to the next. But ruchnius, the cultivation, I can't tell how important this is because so many of us spend decades spinning our wheels. We're all good people. We're all holy people, all spectacular people. But yet so many of us end up running in place for so long. We don't get traction because we're trying to hold on to too much, grab on to too much, do too many things simultaneously. Choose one thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need you to perfect everything at once. He just needs you to give your undivided attention to one thing right now. Master that. Get a handle on that, and then move on to the next. In fact, amazingly enough, if you take a look at number 8, so remember again, this is the last pasuk of last week's parsha. The last Parshas Yisro ends in a very strange way, right? Yisro is a pretty dramatic parsha. We saw the dramatic story of Yisro and Tzipora and the boys last week, but Matan Torah, Sinaitic Revelation, how does the parsha end? In a very strange and nondescript way. You shall not ascend with steps to my altar so that your nakedness shall not be exposed upon it. Okay, hey, so what is this talking about? The Mizbeah. Remember again, I want to point out, what's strange about this pasuk? What's strange about it? Right? We haven't even discussed the Mishkan yet. Right? The truth is, we did have a veiled reference to the fact that there's going to be a Beis HaMikdash in Az Yashir. Tivi emo v'sita emo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us, and ultimately again will plant us down. That's a veiled reference to the Beis HaMikdash. But there's been no discussion about a Beis HaMikdash. Now suddenly Kadosh Baruch Hu says, by the way, when you build an altar, you're going to build, number one, you're going to build an altar. When you build an altar, I want you to go ahead and have a ramp, not steps, so that ultimately, again, your nakedness should not be... So again, even the nakedness part, what does that mean? Right? The big day kahuna, the kohen wore an outer tunic and also wore undergarments, right, as part of it. There's no exposure of the body. So if you take a look at the Noam Elimelech in number 10, he says so beautifully, Rak mitchila targilas atzmocha bahadarka mimadrega lamadrega bachna gidola. You know what the incredible thing about a ramp is? A ramp is a gradual ascent. Right? If you notice, by the way, there's a real chachma to putting in ramps. If you've ever had, right, if you know this, like if you have to construct a ramp for whatever the reason, it's not the pshat that you could just make a ramp, right? You need a certain slope, right? Because if the slope is too steep, then the ramp doesn't work. The ramp doesn't work. So it's a chachma. It's got to be enough to get you from point A to point B, and point B is higher than point A, but the slope has to be gradual enough that I can make it up there, hopefully without too much effort. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, by the way, I just want a ramp on the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach represents the place of divine service. I don't need you to get to the top quickly. I just need you to have a gradual ascent. One foot in front of the other. One small step after the next. Just push yourself forward a little bit each and every day. So, ki sikna eved ivri. Why does the Kadosh Baruch Hu begin by telling us ki sikna eved ivri? Acquire for yourself the status of a servant. A servant serves the master for the sake of receiving reward, which is not the highest level of divine service. That's selfish. Our goal is to get to selfless. It's okay. Start with selfish. And put one foot in front of the other, go up the ramp, small incremental steps of spiritual growth. So the Torah starts out with the laws of the Hebrew servant to teach us this dramatic lesson. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not need dynamic, instantaneous growth. He just simply needs one small step after the other. Lubavitcher Rebbe, in number 11, says a little bit differently. The Rebbe writes, so remember again, so we're just keep we're trying to figure out why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu see fit to begin the Mishpatim section with Eved Ivri? After all, again, remember, it refers to such a small segment of the population. People who stole, that's a small segment. And people who stole or can't pay back, that's even a smaller segment. It only applies during Yovel. So now we see number one, told us Yaakov Yosef, Tinoam Elimelech, teaching us the idea, no, embedded in this mitzvah, embedded in this halacha, is the concept of what it means to grow. What is the paradigm for spiritual growth? And the answer is small steps. Small steps. Start out at selfish, make your way to selfless. Start out on the bottom of the ramp. You don't have to get to the top in just a moment, but rather, again, just take small steps, one after the next, after the next. The Rebbe, the Baruch Rebbe, goes in a little bit of a different approach. He says, look at number 11, Eved Ivri, hu Adam nochus biyoser, mibichino ruchnis. Adam shenitvas bigneva, va'af nimkar b'shalkach le'eved. So the Rebbe makes an amazing observation. He says, who is the Eved Ivri? The Eved Ivri b'pashtos, right on a basic level, is probably on the lowest rung of society. Because think about this. Number one, he's a thief. Number one is a thief. He's stealing from someone else. Now, what else is unique about this? So think about this. If you had a family member who chas v'shalom stole from someone and couldn't pay back, what would you do? You pay for them, right? Especially if the only alternative was to go ahead and have them sold into servitude, most probably you would go ahead and bail them out. Maybe with some conditions, with some provisions, but you would bail them out. Says the Rebbe, this individual who steals, doesn't have money to pay back, and is sold into servitude, is really part of the lower echelon of society. And probably on the periphery of society. Number one, he's stealing, which means he's of compromised moral character. Number two, he has no money. I mean, if you're going to be a thief, at least what? Be a good thief, right? To have a little money in the bank. You know, a little. If you're going to be a Russia, at least try to be a good Russia. So he has nothing. And not only that, it appears he has no family or support system or friends to be able to fall back on to help extricate him from these difficult circumstances. So this individual is a highly compromised person. So writes the Rebbe something amazing. So listen to this. The Rebbe says, you might have thought that you should just write off such a person like this. If this is where you're holding in life, that you're stealing from people, you don't even have the wherewithal to pay back, which means, remember again, if you're stealing from someone and you don't have the wherewithal to pay back, what does that mean? Not only do you not have money in the bank, but obviously whatever you stole, you already what? You already used and spent, right? Seemingly a very gluttonous type of lifestyle. You have no friends who are willing to help you. You have no family who's willing to step in and aid you. So you might have thought that such an individual, you know what? You, my friend, are a lost cause. You're a lost cause, right? Someone like this, who has sunk to such depraved levels, you are clearly a lost cause. Look at the second paragraph. Yet, bedinim elu melamedes osanu haTorah, shegam adam nachus ze, roi shi'asku bo, obil chosav, va'af bo, yesh linog bechavit. Therefore, the Torah Kedosha tells us that even this individual who looks so compromised, this individual who looks so peripheralized, so marginalized, this individual who maybe you would look at and you would say, you know what, this person is beyond repair. This person is beyond repair. There's nothing to do for this individual. There is no way to help this individual. This person is done. Even for a person like this, afbo, yesh linag b'kavod. Even for a person like this, you have to act with kavod, act with derech eretz, b'chesed u'berachamim, with kindness, with compassion, lefarnis osto ves ishto ubanav, and only to take care of the individual. But remember again, if this individual happens to be married and has children, what's the halacha? Not only does the man become the servant, his wife doesn't become a servant, his children don't become servants. But the master has an obligation to support the entire family. And then when 6 years come, to go ahead and set him free. And as I mentioned before, when you set him free, you don't send him away empty-handed. Lo shalchero reikam. Hanik tanik lo. You don't send him away empty-handed. Rather, again, you give him of your wheat, of your grain, of your oil, of your grapes. Dine evet ivri. Mashkifin efo. Es chashivuso. Uma'aloso shalagufa yehudi. The mitzvah of evet ivri tells us how important every Jew is. There is no person who is beyond salvation. There is no person who is so broken that he is beyond repair. Even the Eved Ivri, who again, let's be honest, is the lowest echelon of society, the lowest rung on the societal ladder, a thief who can't pay back, who has no one to lean on, and is going to be sold ultimately again as a piece of property, at the end of the day, even that person has a worth. Invest in him, love him, take care of him, believe in him, and he ultimately again will become rehabilitated. No matter, so says Rebbe something amazing. The halachos of Eved Ivri teaches us that no matter how compromised and broken a person may appear, no person is beyond salvation and repair. No person is hopeless. No person is helpless. Sometimes an individual cannot help themselves. You understand, by the way, what an Eved Kenani is? An Eved Kenani is taking the person from the lowest level of society, bringing him into your home, bringing him into your life, giving him a job, supporting his family, giving him a loving, warm, embracing, and positive environment. And then 6 years later saying, you know what? You're ready to go back into the world. And by the way, I'm not going to send you out empty-handed. Here's a little bit of startup capital for your life. You know what we call? Do you know what we call? When you give him of the produce, of the grain and of the oil and of the wine, it's called hanaka. Hanaka is the same shoresh as what? Right? It's anak, to make great, and also lahanik, which means to nurse. To nurse. The same way that a mother nurses her child. To give the baby nutrients, to give the baby health, to give the baby vitality. Sometimes you have to take a person who is down on their luck and who is down on themselves and invest in them and believe in them and nurse them back to positive health. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first lesson of Eved Ivri is a lesson which teaches us no one is beyond salvation. No one is beyond repair. Never give up on anyone. So by the way, whenever we speak about never give up on anyone, who else does that include? Ourselves. Right? Whenever we speak about these messages of not giving up on others, always included in that is, no matter how far I've sunk, no matter what shape, bad shape I'm in, no matter how many wrong turns or bad decisions or failures I've encountered, don't give up on yourself. And I'll show you something amazing. Reb Tzadik. Reb Tzadik takes this even a step further. He says, if you take a look at number 12, we're not going to do this whole piece because of time, but he says something so beautifully amazing. He says, you know, there's another piece to this Eved Ivri. If you take a look, paragraph Aleph, 12 Aleph, Ki sikne Eved Ivri, uk dikvar amarnu depegam ze gorim averos. Vaz en emar, Ki sikne Eved Ivri, shepagam vaze achinim kal Eved. A person has messed up so badly. Remember again, when you're sold as an Eved, you know essentially what that means? You know what that means? That means you've messed up so badly in life that you don't even know how to run your own life. You don't even know how to be independent. You don't even know how to assert any level of autonomy over your existence. So now we have to give you almost into like the custodianship of someone else. Someone else is going to become like the owner over your life. That's how badly you've messed up. He goes on, Mika makum. So we're going to leave out the Shabbos part. But what happens? At the end of 6 years, even though you've messed up, at the end of 6 years, we believe in your ability to what? Rehabilitate yourself. Just like Shabbos. Our Shabbos represents the ability to infuse new spirituality into otherwise mundane lives. So the Eved Ivri, no matter how badly you've messed up in life, 6 years you rehabilitate yourself, then your Shabbos is going to come, you're going to go out. Now watch this. Paragraph Beis. Va'af mi shenishtake bechet. Ad sha'amara hafdi es ishti ve'as banai. So remember again, there's another part to the Eved Ivri story. Turn the page to source number 13. So what happens if the end of the 6 years, the Eved says, Im Adonav yitin lo l'isha. So remember again, one of the things that you could do with an Eved Ivri is you could give him a non-Jewish maidservant in order to produce offspring. You're allowed to do that. So what's the halacha? Im Omar Yomar Ha'Eved. What happens if the sixth year comes and the Eved says, Ahafti es Adoni, es ishti ve'es banai, lo etze chafshi. What happens if the Eved says in year number 6, I like this. I can get used to this. I like my master. I like the work. I like my non-Jewish maidservant wife. I like all of this. I don't want to go free. Reb Tzadok understands this. So again, we know the halacha. The halacha is v'gishu adonav ala alokim, v'gishu ala adal samaz zav, v'yatsa adonav esaz no, v'avadol yolam. You pierce his ear, which is a whole discussion. Also bring him to the doorpost, pierce his ear, and literally v'avadol yolam, he becomes the servant of the master forever. Now we know forever doesn't mean forever. Forever means when? Until Yovel, until the Jubilee year. So Reb Tzadok says something amazing. Go back now for a moment to 12 days. What does this mean? When the Eved says, Ahafies Adoni, as Yeshiva said, remember again, the wife that he's referring to, is not his Bashert, right? That's not the Jewish woman who he's married to. The woman who he's referring to is the Gentile maidservant. That's who he's referring to. The children that he's referring to are not the children he had with his Jewish wife. Those are the children he had with the non-Jewish maidservant. By the way, who are not really even, they're his, but they're the property of the master. They don't even go with the Eved wherever he goes. Those become the property of the master. So what does it mean when he says, I love these things? He says, paragraph base, 12 base, Vaf mishenishtake bechit ad shamar ahaftias eshti ves banai. So the Tzadik says, there are some people who don't get rehabilitated in 6 years. And the 6 years come, and they still are unwilling to leave those things that hold them back. They're still unwilling to go ahead and take ownership over their lives. They're unwilling to correct the flaws. They're unwilling to make the changes. They're unwilling to modify their lifestyles or behaviors. They're okay with the way they are. So what happens? They stay in servitude a bit longer. But comes the Yovel year, they go free. Reb Tzadok says, no person is beyond salvation. The only variable is what? How long your salvational process spans for. Some people just need a little bit of time to turn themselves around, and some people need a little bit of a longer window in order to affect transformative change. But each of us has the ability to change. Each of us has the capacity to change. Each of us has the ability to make ourselves into the people we truly need to become. As such, says Reb Tzadok in the Lubavitcher Rebbe, this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins with the halachos of Eved Ivri. Because these halachos meant to convey to us two incredibly important cornerstone pillars of our life hashkafa. Number one, spiritual growth should be incremental, methodical, and slow. And number two, no matter how badly you mess up in life, no one is ever beyond salvation. How many times in life, bless you, do we give up on ourselves? And how many times in life that do we assume that because we've made mistakes and bad decisions, we are incapable of actualizing greatness? Or how many times in life do we think that we've compromised ourselves because of decisions we have or we haven't made, and we're ready to throw in the towel? This is who I am. This is what it is. Comes along the beginning of Parashas Mishpatim, Ki Sikna Eved Ivri, Sheish Shanim Yavod, Shabbos comes for everyone. Freedom comes for everyone. But you have to devote the time to rehabilitate and remake yourself. And no matter how badly you've messed up in life, at the end of the day, we all have the ability to start again, to start new, and to find our inner greatness. And perhaps, just to end with this, this is what David HaMelech was saying. Go back to number one, source number one. What was David HaMelech ultimately saying in this capital? Divrei avonos gavru meni. Kadosh Baruch Hu, words of iniquities have overcome me. David HaMelech says, you know, sometimes I look at myself, I look at my life, and I feel like I've hit such a dead end. I feel like I've made so many bad decisions that I cannot reverse out of it. I feel like it's the end of the line. I feel like I am beyond salvation. Dovra Melech talking. I feel like I'm beyond salvation. I feel that, you know what, there's nothing for me to do anymore to engage in potentially course-correcting activity. And in that moment, Ata Techaprein. You see, Dovra Melech says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in moments when we give up on ourselves, you never give up on us. Even when I think that I am beyond salvation and atonement, Ata Techaprein, you forgive and you atone. Because you are the HaKadosh Baruch Hu who gave us the mitzvah of Eved Ivri. You are the God ultimately again who taught us the concept that no matter how badly you mess up in life, there is always the ability for atonement, always the ability for salvation. Even when I give up on myself, David HaMelech says, I glean incredible strength knowing that you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, never give up on me. All right, we'll stop over here. Just an important announcement. There is no class next week. Emir Hashem, the week after that, I think we're going to cover some Purim-related topics, Emir Hashem. We'll see. All right. Yes.